And welcome back to Coast, where this hour we will take your phone calls with the adventurer, Robert Young Pelton, right here on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back to Coast, Robert Young Pelton with us. We're going to take your calls. Duck on it, Robert. I've got people calling me wanting to know where the white Sasquatches are in Africa now. We're talking about Robert's group. That's what they're doing. They're going out there and be safe. So, can I ask you this? Are you taking weapons?
No, I don't travel with a weapon. I carry one of my knives, you know, my DPX gear knives
right.
that I make.
You produce those.
No, I have really unattractive slack-jawed people that carry weapons for me.
Hey, by the way, the TSA, remember we were talking about that over a year ago? They finally threw that little rule out, didn't they?
Well, I was right. Remember I said
yeah, that, you predicted it.
But I think now you can keep your headsets and your music blaring and you can talk on the phone, so. Maybe it was better to have knives.
You're getting text. Close. You can't talk on the phone yet, but we're getting close to that. Everything else you can just do.
Exactly.
I always wondered what that did technically to the plane if you had your phone on. I never understood that.
Like I said, in the old days, you had a radio wave. You remember the old Nextels and whatever? And
yeah.
And then you had hard drives with big disks that had electromagnetic interference. But you know, an iPad or an iPod is sending out a very minor signal on Bluetooth or whatever, and ultimately the pilots that I asked saying, well, why do people have to turn the phone off, said, we're just acting as cops for the FCC, who wants no radio transmissions above certain altitudes.
And, that's what it was, of course, because you know I used to think, okay, if this is dangerous for the plane, this is the simplest tool for a terrorist. You get on board with your cell phone and you don't shut it off.
Yeah, well, good luck.
That's not it. Let's take some calls. Hour's going to go by quickly. Keith in Rochester, New York. You're on with Robert Young Pelton. Keith, go ahead.
Yes. In 1944, Stalin determined that the Chechens were helping the Nazis, so he had that entire population exiled to the east. Over the years, the Chechens filtered back to their homeland. Very simply, knowing what Stalin was capable of, why didn't he exterminate the Chechens the way that he exterminated other peoples? If he had done that, the Russians today would not have this problem of the Muslim terrorists.
Well,
why didn't Stalin, he killed 10 years earlier, he had surrounded the Ukraine and wiped out Ukrainians through severe starvation. Why did he just exile the Chechens? He had them rounded up. He could just as easily have murdered them.
But if you look at a map of Russia, you'll see a lot of strange borders that divide ethnic groups in half and put them in the wrong places. So when the Chechens were deported to Kazakhstan, they actually said that they were sending down 150,000 Russians to build bridges. And then at gunpoint they did massacre, you know, hundreds of thousands of Chechens and moved them to Kazakhstan. And the problem is that they were also officially repatriated. So, you know, they were sort of forgiven. You'll find all kinds of strange mix-ups in Russia because they've moved people here to there to minimize the threat. But on a much larger historical scale, you know, the Chechens have only been Muslims for about 150 years. The Chechen or the mountainous people there have always been fighting any invader. And they've won, I think, 4 out of the 6 wars. So they have a history.
You know, Ukraine is having some incredible problems right now, Robert. What's going to happen there?
Well, once again, I remember I told you about Putin wanting to pull back into the Russian Federation some of the pieces that fell off.
That's right.
And Ukraine is one of those, and he sort of has them by the you-know-whats because he exports oil. So they've done some horrible things to manipulate the government there. And by manipulating the government, they've created the outrage in the population who sees the Ukraine as a separate country, not a Russian, you know, not part of the Russian Federation. And it's almost like if the Americans went into Canada and said, you're part of America now. I mean, I'm sure the Canadians would be quite upset. So he's going to, by hook or by crook, you saw how he stole chunks of Georgia by pretending like the people were, you know, being slaughtered and sending in Russian troops and then grabbing chunks of Georgia. And this is a very Russian. Back in the old days when they had the old wars, the Russians would send in groups of people to start a terrorist organization, and then those people would ask for the Russians to come help them, much much like Afghanistan and Nagorno-Karabakh and places like that. So he's using the same tactic. You know, he's a former FSB member, you know, KGB.
Oh, yeah, he knows what he's doing.
Yeah, exactly.
We don't hear too much about Bosnia-Herzegovina anymore. What's going on in that region?
Things are fine. I mean, you know, Kosovo is a new country. That was the country before South Sudan. I think people now are just focusing on jobs rather than ethnicity, and there aren't a lot of players trying to get people divided. You know, you had a bunch of bad actors that caused much of the slaughter and the dying. But I think they're just coming into their own. I mean, it's going to be a peaceful place.
How did we play that out? Did we do a good job there?
Yeah, we divided and conquered, and we poured a lot of money in there. You know, we still have a U.S. base in Kosovo. A satellite country. We tried to split people up, but we poured so much money in there that they said, oh, look, we can make money if we just stop squabbling and stick to our knitting. So that's one of the concepts that we tried to use in Iraq and Afghanistan, was just pouring in, you know, billions of dollars to stimulate jobs in the economy to get people who would be angry and cranky out of the hills and into the towns and working.
All right, next up we go to St. Louis. Percy's with us, first-time caller. Good morning, Percy.
Yes, hi, George.
Hello?
Hi, Percy.
Yes, thank you so much for getting the call. I actually just had a quick question for the gentleman
sure.
over there. I'm actually from Uganda myself, and I was very interested in the information he was providing to the listeners. My question was, where can we find the Vice documentary once you have completed the trip? And my second question was, as a Ugandan citizen, there's been this conspiracy going on that the current regime in the country, Museveni, purposely does not want to find Kony because so he can continue getting all the financial aid and benefits coming abroad to help him find Kony. So if you could elaborate on that,
okay,
that would be
great.
Appreciated. Thank
Thanks,
you.
Percy. Let's take that one first.
The gentleman makes a very good point. If you know what AFRICOM is, it's like CENTCOM or WESTCOM or PACCOM. AFRICOM was created to engage with the entire continent of Africa. And for many years, Africa had no idea what to do. They're still headquartered in Germany, and they would sail around the continent with a ship saying, do no harm. And people say, that's nice. See ya. The Chinese have already been here. So it was hard for the Americans to engage, and so the counter-LRA program, which is probably about $200 million, and it's one of the favorite projects of President Obama, has put in about 100 Special Forces troops in there doing training to four, sort of a multinational force. And then we also have training for the Ugandans, who are sending troops into Somalia to fight Al-Shabaab. And we also have Ugandans inside South Sudan with tanks and aircraft killing South Sudanese as part of this very strong military presence. And the Ugandans are good soldiers. You know, you'll see Ugandans all around the world. They're very well trained. And I think they get paid about $1,400, the government does, and then they pay the actual soldier about $700. So the actual government pockets about, you know, $400 to $600 per troop that they rent out. Now, the gentleman was asking, you know, is there a conspiracy theory that they don't want to find Kony? I'll tell you an interesting story. There's a gentleman named Eben Barlow who created a company called Executive Outcomes. And Eben was asked by a philanthropist, a Quaker gal, to help her find Kony. Now, Eben has been using trackers and has been fighting wars in Africa since the 90s, and he knows what he's doing. He hired and trained up a group of Ugandans. They actually went in and they ambushed Kony while he was at a camp with his major leaders.
Huh.
And then Eben Barlow was thrown out of the country by the U.S. State Department. Now, that's not a conspiracy. That's
a fact.
Yeah, so instead of getting a medal or a pat on the back, he was tossed out of the country for basically taking unilateral action. But he did exactly what he said he would do. And he was the only person in recent times that's actually ambushed Kony when he was in a camp. So now you have this $200 million program to train up, you know, South Sudanese, Congolese, Ugandan, and Central African troops. And they're looking at an area the size of Texas, you know, the giant area flying these Hueys in and training soldiers how to walk through the bush, and African soldiers are not really happy about walking through the bush. So, yeah, there is something going on, and that was one of the things that triggered my interest, because 20 years, now think about it, for 20 years, no one has captured Kony.
Nope.
And he's not, you know, he's not Osama bin Laden. He doesn't have Gulf money. He doesn't have, you know, he has sat phones and he has some money, but he's not a sophisticated player. So why hasn't he been caught?
Good point. Now, what about the documentary when you're all done? Where can people see it?
Okay, so we have a website called Expedition Kony. We'll keep updating people on that. We're going to be in Vice magazine and also on the video side. So vice.com is the main portal for the Vice empire. And if you Google my name, if you put in an alert for Pelton and Kony or Pelton in Africa or just Robert Young Pelton, I always pop up there doing something.
All right, east of the Rockies we go. Gary in Dalhart, Texas. You're on with Robert Young Pelton, Gary.
Yeah, thanks for taking my call. This is an honor, Robert. I'm going to ask you more of a personal question, if you don't mind. Just to tell you, I'll be 60 in May, so I'm just a little bit older than you, but I always dreamed about being an adventurer like you, and I can't now because of health problems, so I kind of do my traveling vicariously through Travel Channel Adventures, to name a few, Anthony Bourdain, No Reservations, Ender Zimmer, Bizarre Foods. So my question for you is, I've always wanted to try weird foods. How much enthusiasm do you have for eating some of the odd, weird, exotic cuisine that you may be confronted with on your travels?
Yeah, now this is a myth. I mean, you know, Bear Grylls owns the idea of drinking his urine. Other people eat slugs. I like a good steak. Any fool could be uncomfortable, you know, when they travel. I used to eat all that stuff because it was called a local delicacy, which usually translates into, let's see if the stupid guy eats this. But the bottom line is, I don't really play that game anymore. I enjoy myself. I have good food. I'll eat local delicacies.
I mean, are you going to be able to eat well out there?
Of course. I always eat well.
Do you bring your own stuff, your own food?
No. I'm a good cook. I can put
things together. Well, you got to have it to cook it, though, Robert.
It's on the hoof. I mean, you know, it's running around. You've got to bag it and clean it and serve it up and put it over a fire, pull the vegetables out of the ground. When I was in Liberia, you know, we had no food. I brought in a bag of flour, and I taught them how to make donuts, you know, so.
All right, so you will do that. You will cook whatever you catch.
Yeah, I'm not the kind of guy that brags about eating things that you're not supposed to eat because I'm a big guy. I have to eat and carry a weight and pack and everything. So, but I'll leave it up to Bear and the others to eat all the slimy stuff.
Let's go to Los Angeles. Christian's with us. Hey, Christian, go ahead.
Hello, Pelton. How are you doing? I believe I still have you on my Facebook page. I just wanted to kind of give you a rundown. I wanted to see what your opinion would be. I'll be turning 40 in June. I'm living with my uncle, and sadly, my uncle, his health is declining because he has prostate cancer. So I'm in a position where I'm taking care of him now. And I have a part-time job. And the problem with a lot of young people like me, especially in an area like Los Angeles, in the Wilshire District, it's so competitive now. And it's almost like a college education gets you nowhere. And young people, all like myself, all over the country, have this college loan debt around their neck for the rest of their lives. And it's crazy. Even trying to find a job now, even going to interviews, doesn't get you anywhere because we outsourced jobs, and it makes everything so competitive and difficult. And I've been thinking of the idea of, well, look, with the training that I've received you know, in schooling and technical colleges already, I thought, well, why don't you just be adventurous? You're still young, and just go overseas to, like, let's say, Thailand or something. You know, get out, because the way I see it, Robert and George, the bankers really did a phenomenal job decimating the middle class and decimating the U.S. economy. It's gone. It's not going to come back.
Now,
I mean, that's how I feel. They did a fabulous job destroying the United States, even Europe. I think the economy has been shot. I heard about a year ago, I think the author who did the book, the Bilderberg Group, Daniel Yushlin, if I'm pronouncing his name correctly.
Estulin.
He lives in Thailand. And he said, yeah, well, you know, Thailand is cool. I mean, you know, it's you can live out there comfortably. Here in L.A., for example, the with the property values and the rents are skyrocketing.
Wow, they're huge. And I guess where Christian's heading here, Robert, and for the sake of time, let me paraphrase it. Where does someone who wants to be an adventurer go? What does he do?
Well, you know, first of all, it's funny. Thailand is full of Westerners. I mean, all the contractors that worked in Iraq and all the people that worked all around the world ended up thinking, why do I have to have this miserable mortgage and bad weather and whatever? And they ended up just living in a beautiful house in Thailand or Croatia. The world is your oyster. I mean, the skills you may have in Los Angeles are probably not that competitive, but they're actually quite competitive in other markets. And, you know, this is a world economy. And when you talk about the bankers destroying the world, they haven't actually destroyed the brain trust. You know, you have to go where your skills are worth the most or your cost of living is the lowest or hopefully both. My stepfather always said something interesting, and I think he was right on the money. He says, always sell the thing that people want to the people with the most money. And
yeah,
he ended up being a hydrologist for the Saudis because they needed water. They had plenty of people looking for oil.
That's right. Good.
So do a little thinking, you know, out of the box and say, what do I have that somebody really wants that they don't have? And then start making those connections.
I've got a friend who has a friend who married a woman from Cambodia, and they send $30 a month, Robert, back to her parents, and they think the guy's a king. $30 a month, and they actually think he's a king.
Well, you know, the only downside, I mean, I had a friend who gave up his big Hollywood job and moved to the border in Burma and went in and out doing refugee relief and all kinds of adventurous things. And he got homesick for Los Angeles, and he married a beautiful lady over there and had a son. Came back to Los Angeles and said, oh, now I remember why I left.
Did he go back?
Yeah, so he's back and he's happy, and he's in a very village, you know, he's in a village community, and now he runs those refugee trips. He lives happily in a very low key environment, and he's the boss. You know, he's the king of the town.
Well, you know, I love this country, and I'm staying in this country, and I'm not going anywhere. But Christian's right about the middle class; they've been whittled away. Are we going to get that back?
No, I think the middle class is dead because that was a construct of the post-war boom. You know, the middle class was built on real estate. And
that's right.
Moving up on houses and having...
And manufacturing. And that's gone too.
Yeah, labor jobs, you know, that paid you a decent wage. I would defy anybody to go to a college, get a good job, work there for 50 years, retire on a pension. I think that's long gone.
Those days are gone. You know, the days of my father, he worked at Ford Motor Company, God rest his soul, all his life. Those days are gone.
Right, and he made a product that Americans bought that was made with American hands, American materials, and it was sort of a self-washing system. Now you're buying cheap imports from Asia, and you're sending all your money overseas, and you're wondering why there's no skills. But the other thing is, you know, technology. You watch young people today. They're multitasking. They're doing a documentary, writing a story, programming something. You know, they're working 15 different things at once, and they don't ever think of themselves as ever having a job. They're all sort of independent brands.
Yeah, that's right. Robert, we're coming back with final phone calls for you on Coast to Coast AM in just a moment. Well, we're talking about the ancient alien theory next hour, so make sure you're part of the program. And if you haven't watched our television program yet, Beyond Belief, you can do so by going to that website, beyondbelief.com. 10 days free. Internet-based, it is growing by leaps and bounds. Simply go there, take a look at it. You can also look at all the other programs that are available there by going to beyondbelief.com. Welcome back with Robert Young Pelton and, of course, your phone calls. Robert, give me your update thoughts on Edward Snowden and the NSA.
Well, he got a rise out of Obama. And I know President Obama wouldn't have made that speech if we hadn't all been reading about the variety of programs that are used in both commercial and government information gathering. It's the part that's missing is that we don't understand that most of this information is both generated and collected by private corporations. So that's one area that we haven't spent much time on. And the other part is how little effectiveness on administration has had in stopping either terrorist plots or terrorists from damaging Americans.
So true. Now, you know, and do you really think, though, they're going to curtail the surveillance at all?
No, it's a lazy way. I mean, it's like he just grabbed the whole haystack, you know. Instead of looking for the needle, he just grabbed the whole haystack and make all the hay the thing you're looking for, so you've won. But we still need the old-fashioned flat foot, knocking on doors, you know, making friends, asking questions, you know, community-type policing, because, you know, most of the 911 perpetrators were identified to the FBI when they were in these flight schools.
And they did nothing.
The community pointed them out for being sort of unusual and up to no good. So, yeah, strong community works much better than secret surveillance.
I think so, too. I think so, too. Let's take some final calls. Carlos is with us in Carson City, California. Thanks for calling, Carlos.
Good evening, George and Robert. Our government, through its stages, the CIA, is stirring up trouble in most parts of the world based on the literature that I've read. They're in Somalia. The CIA is financing the warlords to go at each other, destabilizing Somalia. And in Yemen, they're paying Saleh over there, the dictator, to allow us to test our drones on the people, drones that will probably be used here in the United States. But I'm more concerned right now with Mexico because I was born there. Mm-hmm. And I see the problem, horrible problems that's causing over there. You know, Mexico is in a civil war now.
Yeah.
And I see helicopter gunships being used, armored personnel carriers. Is Plan Mexico or the Merida Initiative, whereby the United States is sending $500 billion a year to Mexico, is that money being used to in turn purchase that equipment from us? I suspect that it is, and I suspect also the CIA is busy manipulating all the drug networks to kill each other. And
if you look at a model, you look at Colombia, where, you know, we give money, and then the Colombians get to buy Black Hawks and training from contractors. We then sell them surveillance. You know, there is a drone program in Mexico. There is covert activity with Navy SEALs working with Mexican Marines. They follow a strict set of laws, but, you know, a lot of the successes against the FARC in Colombia and some of the cartel leaders in Mexico have been because we have been using very sophisticated surveillance, the kind we use in Iraq and Afghanistan. We've been using special operations troops who train up the Marines, and they choose the Marines because they feel they're sort of less corruptible. And then the teams fly out while the Mexicans execute the mission. So you're seeing a militarization of the police apparatus, and sometimes that's good and sometimes that's bad. In Colombia, they didn't want to militarize the military because they felt it was corrupt and would lead to instability. In Mexico, the police is a lot of the problem, you know, the kidnapping.
Oh, of course.
Extortion. So as you militarize the police, you then create sort of the secondary effect. So it's too early to judge, but yes, we are engaged in a war in Mexico.
The police are unbelievable in Mexico, and there's nothing you can do about it if you're traveling down there.
Right.
Next up, we go west of the Rockies. Hi, Leo in New Mexico. Go ahead, Leo.
Yes, good evening, gentlemen.
Hi.
Mr. Young, I would be interested in knowing, from your perspective, the take on, I've heard so many different and conflicting accounts of Osama bin Laden's demise. Did he or did he not die in this raid? Did the raid actually take place? I mean, I've heard everything from that to that he died 10 years before that. So I'd be interested to know that, and I'll listen off the air.
Right.
Yeah, there was a rumor based on a Predator video that bin Laden was under a tree, and then he stepped out, and then the Predator hit it. They sent in a recovery team. It was inconclusive, but a lot of guys within the special operations community said, yes, we got him. And then, of course, he made those videos. But the reality is that bin Laden was kind of gelded. You know, he was in Chitral when I was looking for him. And then he was in Abbottabad in that house. And the time that he was in that house, he wasn't really functioning as a leader of anything.
He was just hiding, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was time out, you know? He was being parked.
Yeah.
And very close to a Pakistani military base. And if you remember way back, we used to talk about this. That's where people hide, is either on military bases or areas where they're protected. But I do believe that Osama bin Laden was located by intelligence gathering, and that he was killed in a raid. I always find it slightly suspicious that we never got to see his body, because that's always, you know, when they get the 10 most wanted or the desperado,
yep,
roll his body out in the street. And I think that's always going to create some sense of conspiracy. But Al-Qaeda has admitted that he's dead. He hasn't made any videos. He hasn't really surfaced anywhere. And he really wasn't lionized to the extent that we thought he would be. You know, he's not the hero. And Al-Qaeda is really not much of anything anymore in that area, you know, in Pakistan.
Yeah, what's happening? You know, when they talk about the, you know, resurgence of Al-Qaeda in Iraq.
Right.
Is
well,
that
the way it works now is it's a franchise. And so basically, if you get 12 of your friends together and you make a video and you say,
you're Al-Qaeda.
You know, right, we're Al-Qaeda in Brooklyn. You send the video out, and then you'll get a sponsor, like a baseball team. So some Emirati that goes and hires hookers and strippers has to atone for his sins. He can fight jihad by donating, you know, a percentage of his income.
And he does.
To groups who are fighting jihad, and that essentially gets them a spot in heaven. And that's why you see this very, very aggressive use of videos, and, you know, here we are doing this, and look, we're killing this guy, and we're blowing this up. Because these are things people show their friends on their phone, and they say, you know, that's my boys. Now, these are very secretive arrangements, but Al-Qaeda is sort of a centralized, you know, IBM or Beatrice that has money flowing and corporate structure is gone. It doesn't exist.
All right, let's go to Rusty in Sutherland, Oregon, first-time caller. Hello, Rusty. Thanks for calling.
Hey, Mr. Pelton. How are you today?
Good.
I guess this evening, huh?
Yeah, yep. Or this morning, wherever we are.
Yeah. Hey, I tip my hat to you. My dad was quite the adventurer, drugged me all over the western half of the United States doing various things most of my young life. But anyways, my question for you is, what is the reasoning behind the terrorist movement worldwide today? Do they know what their reason is for their...
Yeah, that's a very, very, very good question that everybody should ask, because, you know, we're morphing into a state that it basically invents terrorists, you know, almost like the old FBI entrapment thing where when they had a KKK meeting, it was all FBI informants. A terrorist is someone who kills civilians, who may or may not have an agenda, political agenda, but does not follow the rules of warfare. And a terrorist can be like the founders of Israel, the Haganah, were considered a terrorist group because they blew up hotels, the King David Hotel, but then they morphed into a legitimate state. Al-Qaeda wants to have a caliphate. They want to have a global or transnational structure run by the Quran. But, for example, the Chechens want their independence. They have well-demarked lines. They have very clear ethnic background. They don't want to be run by the Russians. So each terrorist group has their own reasons and their motivation and their end state, but we tend to lump them all in based on political or State Department goals. So it's very easy to get on this. For example, Joseph Kony's, the LRA, is designated as a terrorist group, which is rather odd. But pirates who kidnap ships were not, in Somalia, were not designated as terrorists so that people could pay ransom. So it's a very interesting question. It's worth almost an entire show just going over every single terrorist group and figuring out what they're up to and what they want.
They seem to just keep coming along, too, Robert. You know, you replace one terrorist leader, another one pops up.
Yeah, but that's the way it's going to be, because as the state gets more draconian and more blind and dumbed down and treats everybody, you know, when you go on a plane, you're treated like you might be a criminal. Yeah. As the state treats people like that, people start to push back. And, you know, true terrorist groups like jihadis or thrill killers are really cults. They're people with daddy issues, people sort of unbalanced psyches that like killing. They want to blow themselves up. They want to kill other people.
Yeah, they're suicidal. They're crazy.
You know, we were terrorists back when the British were here. You know, we did bad things to the British, and, of course, we evolved into a nation. So it's something everybody should reboot, because 9/11 really reset the bar in terms of what we were afraid of and what groups we should look at. But before 9/11, a terrorist was a white, middle-aged man who had been in the U.S. military who didn't like the U.S. government. So never forget that.
Well, that's true. Or he jumped out of airplanes with a satchel of money.
Exactly.
You know?
So Timothy McVeigh McVeigh was the guy the FBI was looking for before 9/11. That's why they didn't see the hijackers.
Let's go to Don Salem, Oregon. Hey, Donald, go ahead.
Hi, guys.
Hi, Don.
I just, you know, I'm amazed at the fact that, you know, our constitutional rights are being stripped away, and I don't understand why people aren't jumping up and down mad about this stuff. That's my comment, and thank you, guys.
Well, some people are like sheep, Robert, as you well know, and they just kind of toe the party line.
Yeah, but, I mean, try to go to the White House and talk to someone. Try to get into a government building. And, I mean, you know,
you can't.
The sad thing is the government is protecting itself from the people, and that's not a healthy sign. And secondly, if you or I were to talk about something more than just our personal opinions, suddenly people would be paying a lot of attention to us, you know. And this is what's wrong with today's police state. If you read the Patriot Act, it would scare the bejesus out of you if you see how it's actually applied.
Oh, my God, yeah.
So, you know, we are rolling back some things, but we need to focus on the fact that it's not 9/11. You know, we're well past that. The threats are different. And I always believe that people who are empowered to defend themselves and the people around them is the best way to defeat terrorism and crime.
On the road in Iowa is Stephen. You're on with Robert Young Pelton, Stephen.
Thank you. I just want to give you guys some information in regards to Osama bin Laden.
Okay.
Fox News used Secretary of Defense Gates as a confirmation that Osama bin Laden died 13 December 01. Were you aware of that?
I've seen videos from bin Laden after that, so there was, like I said, the video in which they thought he had been killed in a drone strike, but they were not able to prove it. But he did issue videos and then cassette tapes after that.
So what do you think happened, Stephen? How'd we get him?
He died of kidney failure on a dialysis machine.
There was some talk about that, Robert. Never proven, but I did hear that.
Yeah, everybody had kidney failure. Every terrorist had kidney failure in the tribal areas. But now, Osama bin Laden was shot in the face, and then again in the face, and then he was dead. And he was then apparently dumped in the ocean. We have no proof of that.
You think that was a mistake to do that?
Absolutely. And I don't like the fact that the CIA wanted to make that movie, Zero Dark Thirty, actually worked with the filmmakers to make sure everybody thought that was the case. And I mean, there's no way to investigate it. You know, we have no way of saying if it was done. But you remember that book that came out, and I was thinking, I have never seen a covert agency suddenly publish so many books and do so much work in the film industry to make us think that something happened a certain way. So I'm open to conspiracy theories.
See, Putin would have had the body taken through the roads of Moscow if it had happened there.
No, he would have made a rug out of it in his smoking room so that you can come and sit around and put your feet on bin Laden's backside.
With his head sticking at the end of the rug.
That beer, that's right.
Like a beer thing.
Exactly.
We've only got a couple minutes left, Robert. First of all, give out your websites. People are always interested in following you. We've got the links, but some people are driving around.
As I go to Africa, you know, we'll be doing stuff on expeditionconey.com. If you want to follow me in my writings and whatever I do, that you go to Adventurous Media. You can see my new graphic novel, which is called Roll Hard. It's on adventurousmedia.com. Come Back Alive is my main site. And the Black Flag Cafe is where I drop in. I also have a Facebook page, which you're welcome to hit me up to be a friend. And I'm pretty liberal. I might run out of friends soon. And just, you know, Google my name. I'm always in the news doing something. So I'm always happy to talk to people or let them know what I'm doing.
All right, let's go next. Michelle in Ontario. Hi, Michelle. We got you on here.
Hi. I just want to ask, for women in particular, like I'm thinking about possibly relocating to Chile in terms of its safety to live there and work there. I agree. North America, I'm in Canada right now, there is a lack of listening to the public and an indifference to the public's voice. And it disturbs me what I'm seeing in the a militarized state. What happened in G20 was horrific. So I'm personally thinking about leaving Canada myself. And what's your thoughts or feelings on a country like Chile, particularly for women?
Okay, don't go to Venezuela, but what about Chile?
Well, Chile is a beautiful place, depending on where you live. And I would say people don't leave somewhere. You know, it costs less to fly to Dubai than New York. So you can actually, you know, globally commute. I mean, you don't have to pull up roots and be gone like the old days when you sailed off into the New World. The world, it's very easy to get around. I mean, go to Emirates and look at the prices of what it costs to fly halfway around the world versus from here to Chicago. You'd be quite shocked.
Let's take one more final call if we can. Well, no, they're still rolling in, but we're going to run out of time. We only have a few minutes left here, Robert. So
I'm supposed to plug my gear. I'm supposed to tell people to go look at our stuff at dpxgear.com because it's sexy, and we just had a great SHOT Show with all our new products.
That's your stuff, right? We had a lot of people at the SHOT Show, by the way.
I design knives, and I don't know why I do it. I love it, and we won a bunch of awards. We have like 12 patents, and it's fun. I don't know why, but and people love our stuff. The military uses it, and it's hard-use stuff with a great warranty, so I'd say check it out.
Is it like a little store for you?
Well, we have dealers, but I mean, just look at it and ogle it, and it's just something I really enjoy making things, very simple things, and so these are very tough knives, and I develop in the field. You know, when I go on missions and out to Afghanistan, I hand them out to Special Forces soldiers, and we work with the SEALs, and they tell us what they want or don't want, and then the public gets the benefit of that.
I think we squeeze one more quick call, Asheville, North Carolina. Michael, let's get you in.
Yes, I'd like to ask, how would somebody go about joining you on one of these expeditions?
That's a good question. Just a minute left, Robert.
I'd say just go. I mean, you know, I used to have a business with 50 employees and my name on the building, and I used to drive a Rolls Royce and go to work 7 days a week, 10 hours a day. And as my mentor started falling dead, I thought, you know, I need to do the thing that I want to do, and I did. And the biggest mistake people make is asking permission. And I have to say, the world is your oyster. You need to just do the things that you're going to do because you only have one life.
You only have one life. You might as well make it the best you can.
Yep.
Robert, good luck. Be safe on the Coney visit. Let's try to keep in touch while you're out there.
Yeah, we'll do, George. And it's always a pleasure being on the show.
Okay, Robert Young Pelton. Again, his websites are all linked up for you at coasttocoastam.com. He's going on a mission to try to look for Joseph Coney. We may or may not bring him back, but it's one heck of a mission. In a moment, I will be back as we talk about ancient astronauts, the ancient alien theory. Joshua Abraham joins us on Coast to Coast AM.